Judges chapter 8, verse number 1. It says, "And the men of Ephraim said to him, Why hast thou served us thus, and thou callest us not, when thou wentest to fight with the Midianites? And they did chide with him sharply. He said unto them, What have I done now in comparison of you? Is not the gleaning of the grapes of Ephraim better than the vintage of Abiezer? God hath delivered into your hands the princes of Midian, Oreb, and Zeb, and what was I able to do in comparison of you? Then their anger was abated toward him when he had said that. And Gideon came to Jordan and passed over, he and the 300 men that were with him, faint, yet pursuing them. And he said to the men of Succoth, Give, I pray you, loathsome bread to the people that follow me, for they be faint, and I am pursuing after Zeba and Zalmunna, kings of Midian. And the prince of Succoth said, Are the hands of Zeba and Zalmunna now in thine hand, that we should give bread into thine army? And Gideon said, Therefore, Lord, hath delivered Zeba and Zalmunna into mine hand. Therefore, then will I tear your flesh with the thorns of the wilderness and with briars. And he went up thence to Penuel and spake unto them likewise. The men of Penuel answered him as the men of Succoth had answered him. He spake also to the men of Penuel, saying, When I come again in peace, I will break down this tower. This is our fifth message here in the life and the ministry of Gideon. Wednesday night we cover the popular part of the ministry of Gideon, was the sifting down of his armies, where he went from the 32,000 man army now all the way down to 300 men. And those 300 didn't even have a sword when we went to the battlefield. They had a trumpet and a pitcher and with a light in it. We looked at how God breaks you down sometimes, and how the army had to get smaller and smaller before God could get the victory from that. How the pitcher had to be broken before the light came out. We saw how terrible I am with illustrations. I still got which y'all didn't see when I hit that cup, and it finally did break. By the way, it's a really good coffee cup. If you know what brand that is, get me some of those. Hit it three times. It finally broke the coffee cup, and it cut my finger. I was sitting here bleeding and trying to hide it. I didn't tell you that. I'm not good at illustrations. I should learn my lesson. Anyway, this morning I'm going to continue on here with Gideon. Gideon has won the first part of that battle. God won it for Gideon. He stood where God told him to stand, and God wrought the victory. The enemy began to fight with each other, and then they began to retreat and run home as fast as they could. The enemy did. As we'll see later on, the 120,000 of them have already died at this point after they started being chased, and 15,000 of them are still running or chasing after those, and Gideon, his 300 men army are falling right behind them. Chasing after, they took off. The army took off after him. Gideon's army did. Gideon got a little help at the end of chapter number 7. We saw other men from different tribes started to pitch in. Ephraim went down and caught the two princes of Midian, Oreb and Zeb, and they slew them. And we come to the beginning of chapter number 8. I'm going to try to cover all these verses, verse 1 through 23. But the point I'm going to draw from that comes from verse number 4 that we read earlier. That's what I'm going to title it this morning, Faint Yet Pursuing Them. Well, Lord, so I'm going to try my best to preach to you what the Lord gave to me. He's been preaching to me since Friday morning. Faint Yet Pursuing. Why are Gideon and his 300-man army faint? It was pretty obvious. We all know that last week they had just come through a battle. It was a very abnormal battle. I admit that. They didn't lift a sword against anyone in that battle. Yet the anticipation, none of that anxiety leading up to that battle of that kind, where the only hope was that God was going to have to deliver them or else they were going to be killed. That's the only hope they had. Can you imagine being in Gideon's army on the hillside that night? You and 299 other men standing there with no sword in your hand. Following a farmer. He doesn't know anything about a battle, and you have a lamp and you have a trumpet. Can you imagine? They have been with Gideon for a while. They have watched God pick away at their troops and dwindle them down to almost nothing at this point. Their general doesn't know anything about fighting. Their weapons, nothing there. I don't know about you, but we can talk about faith all day long and how strong we think we are. You let something like that come up, this is going to divide the weak from the strong. And I hope I'd be on the right side, to be honest with you. I don't know. That's a tough place to stand. Yet they stood there. No doubt, they're faint. They're weary. They did that, and God allowed them to have the victory in that part of the battle. But as soon as that was over, then they began chasing the enemy. They was running from it. And at this point, they have more than lamps and trumpets. We'll see later on with Gideon. He's doing more than just blowing a trumpet and saying the sword, Lord of Gideon. He's using a sword. He's doing some work. As soon as they come through this victory, here comes another battle. As soon as they get done with one victory, they got to chase after the enemy and finish that battle. Ain't that the way it is? It's the way it feels most of the time. You have a test of faith. You finally get through it. You think, okay, now it's time for a break. And you got to chase after the enemy. Another battle is ahead. Chasing after the enemy again. Gideon calls for reinforcements now. Some come. And then we get to chapter number 8. Gideon is 300. They're faint because of the battle. They're faint because they won. They still got to chase. They're faint because of all they've been through. They're faint because of the no doubt, the heartache they've had trying to leading up to this battle. But there are many battles here in these verse 23 verses that would make the godliest of men there is faint. I want to look at those this morning. Number one, in chapter 8, we see the battle from the strong side. Verse number 1. And the men of Ephraim said to him, "Why hast thou served us thus, and thou callest us not, when thou wentest to fight with the Midianites?" And they did chide with him sharply. And he said, "Then what have I done now in comparison of you? Is not the gleaning of the grapes of Ephraim better than the vintage of Abiezer? God hath delivered into your hands the princes of Midian, Oreb, and Zeb. And what was I able to do in comparison of you?" Then their anger was abated toward him when he had said that. Gideon has just led these people into a battle with the Midianites who have been, they've been captives to for 7 whole years. They have gotten through this first part, this first battle. They are pursuing after the enemy. Ephraim finally decides to get involved in something for God, and they kill 2 princes and bring their heads to Gideon at the end of chapter number 7. We saw that in Wednesday night. Now in chapter 8, they said to Gideon, "Why didn't you call us, Gideon? We would have helped out more if you just asked us to, then we would have done something. We would have done more if you just called us." Let's look at something briefly here. Who is Ephraim? Ephraim is a tribe in Israel, half tribe of Ephraim. Ephraim is one of Joseph's 2 sons who were named tribes by the father Jacob, grandfather Jacob. Israel's last words to the family. As he's dying there in Genesis chapter 49, he says this to Ephraim and Manasseh. "And his father refused, said, 'I know it, my son, I know it. He also shall become a people, and he also shall be great.'" Talking about Ephraim. "But truly his younger brother shall be greater than he, and his seed shall become a multitude of nations. And he blessed him that day, saying, 'In thee shall Israel bless, saying, God make thee as Ephraim and as Manasseh.' And he set Ephraim before Manasseh." Ephraim being the second-born son of Joseph. Manasseh should have been the stronger. He was the firstborn, should have had that birthright. Jacob, Israel, later name changed to Israel, he put Ephraim ahead of Manasseh. He said he's going to be stronger and mightier than the tribe of Manasseh. Jacob, he said that right before his death. We see Deuteronomy 33:16. Ephraim, again, is a powerful tribe. It says, "And for the precious things of the earth and the fullness thereof, and for the goodwill of him that dwelt in the bush, let the blessing come upon the head of Joseph and upon the top of the head of him that were separated from his brethren. His glory is like the firstling of his bullock, and his horns are like the horn of unicorns. With them he shall push the people together to the ends of the earth. And they are the tens of thousands of Ephraim, and they are the thousands of Manasseh." It's Moses' last words to the children of Israel before he dies. He says, "Ephraim, the tens of thousands of Ephraim, and the thousands of Manasseh." It's a large tribe, powerful tribe. Joshua 17:17. "And Joshua spake unto the house of Joseph, even to Ephraim and to Manasseh, saying, 'Thou art a great people, and hast great power. Thou shalt not have one lot only.'" Joshua himself, that was Ephraim. They are strong, and they shouldn't be arguing about not having enough land. Say, go take the land. If you want more land, go get more land. They're powerful people. Even Joshua himself was of the tribe of Ephraim. Ephraim was a great and a powerful tribe, a huge tribe, one of the strongest there is. And they realize that. They come to Gideon and say, "Gideon, you should have just called us, Gideon. We would have done something." It says they did chide with him sharply. This means they were mad that Gideon didn't call him. Now, correct me if I'm wrong. All of Israel's been in this bondage for 7 years. God sought out Gideon and gave Gideon a job to do. Gideon finally agreed to do it. He got it done. And now people are complaining about how he got it done. He has done Ephraim a favor. He has delivered them from bondage. And now they're complaining because of the way he did it. Oh, but don't forget, they are mad at the way he did it because that's the way God told him to do it. God said, "Gideon, you do it this way." And Ephraim said, "Gideon, you should have involved us in it." God didn't say anything about Ephraim. Gideon did what God told him to do. Ephraim is just mad because they're not the center of attention. They want the spotlight. They want the pat on the back. They want the rest of the tribes to look up to Ephraim. Ephraim, this mighty tribe, they want the victory. They want the rest of the tribes cheering them on because of what they've done, the victory they have accomplished. And now they're whining and complaining to Gideon because Gideon didn't call them before he went and did what God plainly told him to go do. "Why didn't you call me? Why didn't you put me in? Why didn't you let me have a turn?" It sounds like my toddlers. Evie can't talk yet. She's really good at screaming and pinching Josie. And Josie's very good at fussing back at her. I should name them Ephraim and Manasseh. But all this trouble and this whining and complaining coming from probably one of the strongest tribe there is. The ones that ought to be the leader in the nation. They should have taken out Midianites a long time ago. They ought to be the ones standing up and fighting, leading the entire nation to victory. Yet they're the ones whining to get him because they didn't get picked first. Does that sound like a Baptist church or what? I'm going to stop right there and get in the flesh on that. Our first response, if we were getting, would have been, "Look, Ephraim, you had 7 years. You had the resource. You had the personal. You had the ability. And you sat on your seat and didn't do a thing. Now shut up and get out of the way. I have 15,000 more men to go kill. Get out of the way." That's probably what I would have said. Thankfully, Gideon's a lot wiser than I am. He says to him, "Now, Ephraim, what have I done compared to you? I mean, come on now, look at your grace. Look how great you are. Look what you've done. God gave you the princes. He just gave me the nobodies. You, Ephraim, you got the princes. Then their anger was abated towards him when he had said that. He said, yeah, you're right, Gideon. We are pretty great, aren't we? Look at what we did. We did take out the king. We did take out the princes. We are pretty great. You're right. Then they went on their way. They're happy. No matter the fact that Gideon and his 300 men will kill 134,998 Midianites, the real star show is you, Ephraim, because you took out those two princes that were by themselves. Good for you. Why would Gideon do that? Why would Gideon not just blow them out, put them in their place? Was it because he was weak? Was it because he was a bad leader? Was it because he was scared of Ephraim? No. He just went up. He went with 300 men against a 135,000 man army. I don't think Gideon's scared of much of anybody at this point. He did that because he had a job to get done. He is still pursuing. He does not have time to waste arguing minute, stupid little details. Proverbs 15:1 says, "A soft answer turneth away wrath, but grievous words stir up anger." Why is it that the church spends so much time arguing over the smallest things when the truth of the matter is we have a much larger battle to fight outside these four walls? Yeah, we're too busy arguing against another. Why didn't you pick me? Why didn't you let me do that? Well, you're just weak and you don't care and you don't love me. I'm just going to give him a piece of my mind. Trust me, you don't have a piece to share. And I don't either. You better keep it for yourself. What Ephraim said, no doubt, was offensive to Gideon. He has just, through the Lord, saved these people from bondage, saved Ephraim from bondage. Now they complain about how he did it. It was a jab to his ego. It was a jab to his confidence, jab no doubt to his heart. But forget, he knew the real enemy was not Ephraim. The real enemy was the Midianites. He didn't have time to waste. He was not going to sit back and waste time fighting with his brethren when the real enemy is out there that need to be taken care of. Why was Gideon faint yet pursuing? Because he's too busy trying to pacify his own people, the leaders that should have been the leaders of the nation, too busy trying to pacify them to be able to fight with the enemy. Was Gideon a weak leader? No. Boy, he was a wise leader. He had his own faults, and we'll see even more faults later on into this chapter. But in this instance, we can learn a lot from Gideon. Why was Gideon faint yet pursuing? He's already come through a battle. He's trying to finish this battle for the Lord, trying to follow what the Lord wants him to do. He's too busy had to fight with the strongest members of his own tribe, having to pacify them so he can go on and do what the Lord told him to do. See, the battle from the strongest, the battle that should have been the leaders, had to fight against them, pacify them. See, the battle from the inside, verse number 4. And Gideon came to Jordan and passed over, he and the 300 men that were with him, faint yet pursuing them. He said to the men of Sukkoth, "Give, I pray you, loaves of bread to the people that follow me, for they be faint, and I am pursuing after Zebah and Zalmunna, kings of Midian." And the prince of Sukkoth said, "Are the hands of Zebah and Zalmunna now in thine hand, that we should give bread unto thine army?" And Gideon said, "Therefore, Lord, I have delivered Zebah and Zalmunna into mine hand. Then I will tear your flesh with the thorns of the wilderness and with briars." We see that in verse 4, they've gotten through the trouble with Ephraim. He has made them happy, and he's back to the battle, trying to get back to the battle again. He's pursuing again, faint, yet pursuing them. So Gideon comes to Sukkoth, and he says, "Look, we are tired. We are falling after these enemies. We've been in battle. We've been chasing after them, and we're hungry. Can we have a piece of bread?" Not much to ask. What did the prince of Sukkoth say? "Do you have the enemy yet? Have you killed everybody yet? Do you have everybody killed yet?" He said, "Well, no." Here comes these 300 men and Gideon. The enemy has just passed through Sukkoth, or Gideon wouldn't have been coming through there chasing after him. They've seen what they've done. They see how the army's dwindled down. They have already conquered 120,000 men somewhere in there. 301 men and God have conquered 120,000 of the enemy. And they simply asked for a loaf of bread. And the men of the city said, "No, we can't do that. We don't want to pick sides yet. Why should we give you bread when you haven't even conquered the entire enemy yet?" It's a pretty simple request. Gideon says, "You're not going to battle with us. Can we at least have some bread? Can we just get a little help along the way?" He's not asking for much. He's not asking for something irrational. He's saying, "If you're not going to fight, can you give your bread? If you can't go to the mission field, can you give to the mission field? Can you give your bread? If you can't, you're not able to do certain things because of your health or because of your work schedule, can you at least give some of your bread to help out with it? Don't stand back and nitpick and point fingers at them and murmur about the ones on the forefront. Help encourage them along the way. Give them some bread. Get them going. Encourage them. Lift them up. Because your time may come and you're going to be on the front lines. Don't you want somebody to have your back when you're on the front lines?" Gideon says, "If you're not going to come and fight, at least you can give us a little bit of bread." Church, not all of us can be on the front lines at the same time. You'd be wise to help out yourself and help out your church. Just giving some bread. Just some encouragement. Just encourage each other along the way. Just help each other go on to fight some more battles. You see somebody that's faint yet pursuing, go over and give them some bread. Give them some encouragement. Not Sukkoth. He said, you go, you kill the enemy. And then we'll give you some help to go kill the enemy. Doesn't make any sense, does it? You know why they did this? Because they hadn't yet picked a side. That's the only explanation. They were afraid to give to Gideon because if Gideon and 300 happened to lose, then the enemy that's going to come back and get Sukkoth because they helped out Gideon. Never mind the fact these 300 men have already killed over 100,000 men at this point and there's just a few thousand left. Never mind that fact. Never mind their tracker, what God has already done. They said, you go do something more and then we'll give something to help you. What a stab in the back to those soldiers. Their own people won't even give them a slice of bread. Go kill their enemy for them. What does Gideon say? He says, well, I'm going to go and we are going to kill them. And when I do, then I'm coming back and you're not going to like it. He said, I'm going to tear your flesh to the thorns of winter, and with briars. You say, what happened to Gideon? You're so friendly to Ephraim. Now he's hungry. He's angry. That's what we call it. Anyway, you didn't get that anyway. Gideon is tired of it. He's tired. Verse number 8. Anyone have offense to Penuel and spake to them likewise, the men of Penuel answered him as the men of Sukkoth and answer him. Bad mistake. And he spake also to the men of Penuel, saying, when I come again in peace, I will break down this tower. Gideon again says the same thing to these men of Penuel. These men of Penuel are hiding up in their tower. The enemy has just come past them. They're hiding in the tower. These few men with Gideon are pursuing after the enemy. They're tired. They just need some bread, see some encouragement along the way. Men of Penuel won't even come down to their tower to give them a piece of bread. Gideon says, I'm going to come back. I'm going to finish this. And I'm coming back to knock this thing down. What happened? Gideon has a battle from the inside. His own people are not cooperating, not helping him along the way. They're refusing to help him and his troops fight the battle before the entire nation. When Gideon and his men win this battle, it's not just Gideon's 300 men that are set free. It's the entire people of Israel are going to be set free. But yet, they're the only ones willing to give anything for it. Gideon says, I'm going to finish and come back and I'm going to knock it down. What happened? It's a battle from the inside. You say, what's the point, preacher? You know something that will make you faint? It's still pursuing a battle on the inside. The most exhausting thing is to have a battle against somebody who's supposed to be on your side. Gideon made his point clear. He said, I'll be back. We didn't let it stop him from the real enemy. He didn't pull over to the side and whoop him right then like he probably wanted to. You can mark it down if you're faithful at all to this church for some time. One of your fellow brothers and sisters in Christ will offend you. It's going to happen. At one point, somebody's going to say something that's going to rub you the wrong way and you're not going to like it. We're all human. It's going to happen. If you're even remotely faithful, I can almost guarantee I'm going to say something at some point that's going to offend you. Not because I want to. Because I'm pretty good at doing things like that. One more thing, whether you realize it or not, you will most likely offend somebody else. What are we going to do about it? We can stop and fight about it and let the real enemy get away. Don't waste your time arguing, disputing with your own team. Don't forget who the real enemy is. Don't forget who the real objective is. Don't let the real battle pass you by while you try to settle a battle on the inside. Don't lose sight of the real enemy. It is tiring. Is it tiring? Yes, it is. Is it exhausting? Yes, it is. Will it make you feel faint? You better believe it. Faint, yet pursuing. Don't quit chasing the enemy because some small disagreement on the inside. Gideon said, I'll be back. We'll settle this. But I got real trouble to take care of right now. Verse number 13. Gideon came back. Gideon, son of Joash, turned from battle before the sun was up. And called a young man of the men of Sukkoth, inquired of him. And he described unto him the princes of Sukkoth, and the elders thereof, even 70 men. So Gideon comes back early in the morning from the battle before everybody woke up. He found a young man from Sukkoth and he said, tell me who these elders are in this city of Sukkoth. Why do you do that? Because you want to know who made the decision not to help and slay the enemy. I don't believe there's any vote across the entire Sukkoth. I believe the elders who made that decision not to help Gideon. This young man described it to Gideon. He described all 77 of the elders to Gideon. Verse 15, and then he came into the men of Sukkoth and said, behold, Zeba and Zalmunna, with whom you did upbraid me, saying, oh, the hands of Zeba and Zalmunna in thine hand, we should give bread unto the men that are weary. Gideon finds the 77 elders. He says, here they are. You got Zeba and Zalmunna. I told you I'd get them, and I told you I'd be back. Verse 16, and he took the elders of the city and thorns of wilderness and briars, and with them he taught the men of Sukkoth. Talk about an understatement. He taught them with thorns and briars. They learned they ought to follow God's leading. You ought to take care of God's man. You're not going to fight. You should at least be giving and being a blessing to the ones who are going and fight. He taught them. We're getting God's point across. Heard one preacher say one time, he said, and every time somebody came past Sukkoth after that, they got a sandwich passed out to them. Every time. He taught them. Verse 17. And he beat down the tower of Penuel and slew the men of the city. The men of Penuel were trusting in their tower instead of trusting in God and God's plans. So Gideon took it down. And it says, and he slew them. It said, I don't know if they were in the tower when it fell. I don't know if he had hand combat and slew them. I don't know what happened, but they were taken out. They did not trust in God. They did not trust in God's plans. They did not trust in God's man. And Gideon took them out. I'm not going to say that God will come knock down your tower and slay you for not following his leading. He could if he wanted to. But he very well may take those briars and those thorns of the field and teach you. I feel like I've probably been there before myself. You don't want to go. You don't want to support the work. You don't even want to be a blessing to the ones who are doing the work. Okay, you get the thorns and briars. You say, I don't agree with that, preacher. That's okay. But the point is, the battles Gideon faced from the inside were completely and totally just a waste of Gideon's time. All he did was make him tired before he could fight the real enemy. All these folks had to do was join hands with their own countrymen, join hands with God's people, but they refused, and they ended up learning a hard lesson from it. Some of them being killed because of it. Battles on the inside will make you faint. Make sure you keep pursuing. We see also had battles from the past. Verse number 18. Then said he unto Zeba and Zalmunna, what manner of men were they whom you slew at Tabor? And they answered, as thou art, so were they. Each one resembled the children of a king. He said, they were my brethren, even the sons of my mother. As the Lord liveth, ye have saved them alive, I will not slay you. It's an interesting question given here about Gideon. This is the only insight we are given in this story here in the Bible. Gideon is calling to memory of these two men, the men of Israel they slew back at Mount Tabor. He says, they were my brethren, even the sons of my mother. And oftentimes, and the men of Israel said they share the same father, Father Abraham, called brothers like that. But this here where it says, even the sons of my mother, that means these men were slain. They were slain by Zeba and Zalmunna. That means they were Gideon's blood brothers, literally of the same mother, blood brothers. Gideon said, you remember those men you slew before? He said, yeah, they look just like you. He said, yeah, they were my brothers. And because you slayed them, I cannot let you live. You know what will make you faint in the battle? A loss that hits close to home. We don't know exactly when these brethren died. We don't know if it was during the battle or during the chase or if it was before all this started during the 7 years of bondage. We don't know. Whenever it happened, really doesn't matter. The point is, Gideon is facing a battle of mourning the loss of his own brothers, but he doesn't let him stop him from fighting the battle for the Lord. I'm not trying to bring up any pain or hardship any of you may have been through. I'm not trying to open any sore wounds. Losing somebody close, it'll make you faint. Make you not want to carry on. Make you not want to go on and fight any more battles. It didn't stop Gideon. Continue on with the job the Lord had given him to do. Don't let a battle from the past stop you from going on with the Lord. Don't stop serving the Lord because of a battle you're dealing with from the past. Until now, we are completely in the dark on this loss that Gideon has faced. We don't know anything about it. He's fighting his entire battle, leading it, following the Lord, leading his army. We don't know anything about this battle he's facing on the inside. He didn't let it change him. He didn't let it change his objective. He was still going to do the work the Lord told him to do. He didn't let the loss of his brothers turn him away from God. He used it to turn against the enemy and to follow God. He said, you still understand, preacher? Maybe not. Probably not. But Gideon does. His own brother. He watched his own brother be murdered by the enemy. And yet he's still doing the work of the Lord. Faint yet pursuing. Don't let it stop you. See a battle from the past. See a battle from the home. Verse number 20. And he said unto Jether his firstborn, up and slay them. But the youth drew not his sword, for he feared because he was yet a youth. And Zeba and Zalmunna said, arise thou and fall upon us, for as the man is, so is his strength. And Gideon rose and slew Zeba and Zalmunna and took away the ornaments that were on their camels' necks. We could argue about why this young man didn't want to slay these men. We could argue that Gideon shouldn't have asked that of his son. We can argue that. That's not the point I'm trying to make here. The point is, Gideon has sold out to this battle. He has sold out to delivering the people of Israel from the enemies. Why didn't Gideon kill these enemies on the spot? I don't know. Maybe he just wanted to bring them back to Sukkoth and prove that he conquered them. I don't know. The point is, getting sold out to this battle, and he started following God and doing what God wants him to do. It took him a while, but he's all in for it now. But back home, his son does not quite have the same heart for the battle that he does. God told Gideon to take out these men. And I believe Gideon He's still in his right mindset because what he says later on in the next verses, I believe he's still doing what the Lord tells him to do. I believe he's trying to complete the job God has given him, but his son does not quite have the same heart that he has for the enemy. He does not quite have the same heart to do the things of God that he has. His son does not have the same drive to win this battle that his father does. You know what might make you faint during the time of battle? Battle at home. You're spending everything you have physically in the battle. If you're giving it all you have, you're all in it with all your time and your money and your heart. You're doing everything you can for the Lord. But back home, your children or maybe even a spouse isn't quite on board with this thing of serving God. It'll make you faint in the time of battle. Gideon not only had a battle from the strong side, the ones that should have been doing it from the beginning, then a battle from the inside, his own people wouldn't help him, then a battle from the past, honing him and honing his mind, and he also is battling things at home. And yet he is faint, yet pursuing them. Can I encourage you, Christian, I don't know what all you're facing. I don't know what all you've been through. I don't know what all temptations or trials or battles you've been through this week before you came through those doors this morning. But can I encourage you, don't quit now. You may be faint. Don't quit pursuing. Don't quit serving God when it gets hard. Yes, it's tiring. Yes, some may turn against you. Yes, you may have things that haunt you from your past and mourning and different things like you may even have a battle at home. Don't stop pursuing. Don't sell out. Don't give up on God in the meantime because of the battles at home. Focus on who the real enemy is. See the battle at home. Lastly, kind of a strange one. See the battle in the heart. Verse number 22. Then the men of Israel said to Gideon, "Rule thou over us, both thou and thy son, and thy son's son, also, for thou hast delivered us from the hand of Midian." Gideon said to them, "I will not rule over you, neither shall my son rule over you. The Lord shall rule over you." This here is one, I believe, one of the hardest things to battle against. You may not agree. It's flattery. I had another young preacher in Bible college passed me a note one time during class. It was completely random and weird. And I don't know why he did it, but it stuck in my mind ever since he did that. He scribbled on a little notebook paper. And I don't know if he came up with it or if he just copied it for somebody else. But it said this: if Satan cannot tear you down, he will puff you up. And that was stuck with me ever since then. Satan will do all he can to get you to quit on God. But if you persevere and you keep on pursuing as Gideon has done in this chapter, he's been through all these battles, done everything he can. Now Satan will believe he's trying to puff him up. Gideon could have very easily said, "You know what? Sure, I'll do that. I'll be your king. After all, I mean, I'm a pretty good leader. Look at what we've done today. Look at who we conquered today. I did lead all his army to victory." All he had to do was agree. He would have been set for life, and his son and his grandson would have been set, would have had a throne to sit on. It's not what God said to do. It's not the plan God had for his people. There wasn't supposed to be a king in Israel at this time. They were supposed to follow the Lord their God, no king. It wasn't until Israel's later on demanded one from Samuel that they finally got a king. Gideon realizes that. He still realizes it is the same God that brought them out of Egypt, that has delivered them from the Midianites. He realizes it's the same one that he asked for in the beginning in chapter number 6. He realizes the same man. He says, "No, I'm not going to rule. My sons are not going to rule. The Lord is going to rule over you. Even if it costs me some things, I'm going to stay where God told me to stay." Thank God for good, godly leaders. I believe it takes a man devoted to God to turn down a position like this because he knows that's not what God wants. He has been set for life. So that's not what God wants. Be careful in the battle, when you face the battle in the heart, the flattery that comes along with that. Watch your pride. Watch your head. Don't let it blow up. My pastor always warned me. He said, "Be careful of those that tell you you're just the best preacher ever." Some will say that, but the truth is, you're definitely not the best preacher ever. I'm trying to sweeten you up, trying to puff you up a little bit, trying to get on your good side. The best place to be is on God's side, not on anybody's good side. You say, "Well, that doesn't make any sense, preacher. Flattery is a good thing." I didn't say it's not good to hear sometimes. It's encouraging sometimes. You can listen in. Don't let it go to your head. Don't change your position on God, what God wants. Gideon could have very easily messed up. Very easily been crowned king, and very easily could have messed up God's plan for this entire nation of Israel. These very same people, the same people that had a hard time volunteering for the army Gideon had for him before. These are the ones that were fighting against him before. Now they're saying, "Gideon, you should be king." These folks are all for Gideon now. They've all jumped on the Gideon bandwagon now. What a temptation for Gideon. He said, "Nobody liked me before. Now everybody likes him. Might as well. You know, it's not that big of a deal." Be careful. Well, I should understand the problem. These folks are not trusting in God. They're trusting in Gideon. And therein lies the problem. And even Gideon is going to fail you, as we'll see probably tonight. Down through verse 23, Gideon may be faint. He's still pursuing. He's still sold out to doing what God has instructed him to do, no matter the battle, no matter what anybody else says, whether they say something against him, whether they say something for him. He's on fire. He's doing something for God. Continue to do something. Continue to march on for God and pursuing after the enemy. God has told him to pursue. What's the message this morning? Don't quit on God when it gets hard. Yeah, there may be battles. There's obviously battles we're all facing. We have a common enemy. There are also many battles that nobody else knows about except the two that are fighting the battle. Gideon didn't let any of them stop him from doing what thus saith the Lord. He was tired, he was weary, he was faint, yet still pursuing the enemy. Didn't let distractions from the enemies within stop him from doing the will of God. Church, don't quit. Don't get tired and give up. Don't waste your time fighting within yourself. We have a common enemy, sin. Many times our flesh is our own worst enemy. We have enough to fight against, enough to worry about. Don't waste your time fighting with each other. He's just going to wear you down, slow you down, and discourage you, and make you faint in the time of battle. You should be on the battlefield fighting the enemy. There are no clear winners in a fight on the inside. Even if you win the battle, you're probably going to lose the war. Don't waste your time. Faint, yet pursuing. I don't know who all this is for this morning. Maybe it's just for me. Maybe it's somebody this morning that's just tired. Just tired of the fight, and tired of the struggle, and tired of and just not wanting to go on and do anything else. The altar's open down here this morning. Every head bowed, every eye closed, if you would. Nobody looking around. So we're here this morning, you say, "Preacher, I'm just tired. I'm just faint." Be honest with you, I have the same struggles every week. Whether I should continue on or not. This past week has been tough. Satan's tempted me to quit. I'm going to be honest with you. I'm going to encourage you this morning. You can be faint, yet pursuing them. You can be faint and keep on going for the Lord. You can be tired and weary and keep on doing what God's told you to do. You don't have to quit just because you're tired. You don't have to quit just because you're hungry in Gideon's case. Just keep on going for the Lord. Don't let a battle on the inside discourage you from serving the Lord. Don't let a battle from those that should be leaders discourage you from serving the Lord. Don't let a battle at home or a battle from the past or your own mind discourage you from following the Lord. You may this morning say, "Preacher, I don't think I'm even part of the army." Anybody here say, "Preacher, if I died right now, I don't know where I'd go." You may have lost you this morning, never trusted Jesus Christ, your personal Lord and Savior. If that's you today, you're still on the wrong side of the battlefield. Don't you get that settled first. Somebody here today and you say, "Preacher, I am saved, no without a shadow of doubt. If I die right now, I know for sure I go to heaven. But I'm just tired. Like all I do is fight and fight and fight and don't get anywhere in the battlefield. Like all I do is just strive and try to go on and fighting from the inside and battles from the outside and here and there and everywhere." Don't quit. Church, don't quit on God. I know it gets hard and it gets tiring. The devil's going to do all he can to tear you down. And when he can't tear you down, he's going to try to puff you up and try to move you around and move you out of God's will. You say, "Well, it's more money and it's this or that and this job and more opportunities and..." What does God want? The devil can't tear you down, he'll puff you up. What does God want? Where are you standing in the battle with the Lord? Dear Lord, thank you for this day. Thank you for all you've done for us, Lord. Thank you for helping me this morning as I preached. Lord, I pray you help these people here, help our church. Lord, help us to grow and help us to do more for you and go on for you. Lord, help us to stand in the day of adversity. Haven't done all to stand. Lord, I pray us to do all we can for you. In Jesus' name, amen.